From the state capitol, the Florida Public Radio Network brings you Capitol Report.
The Florida Senate passes its version of the state spending plan. Lawmakers say it includes some difficult cuts.
There are difficult decisions that have to be made, and we have to juxtapose one important critical need against another important critical need.
Florida's higher education system could soon get a makeover.
As one who struggles with a relatively unorganized higher education system in the state, I think the consolidation aspect of bringing all of the delivery systems together on the same page is very important.
A House panel approves a measure calling for a 24-hour waiting period before an abortion. And safety advocates rally at the Capitol. I'm Tramell Gomes, and that's all coming up on Capitol Report. The Florida Senate passed a $71.2 billion budget today. It's about $2 billion higher than the House proposal. But Regan McCarthy reports lawmakers are concerned about cuts to higher education, health and human services, and the criminal justice budget.
Senate Budget Committee Chair J.D. Alexander says this year's budget makes some difficult cuts, but he says economic forecasts for the coming year are looking up.
Given the outlook of the next 2 years being, somewhat better, hopefully this is the bottom of the trough, and then we can build budgets that are responsible in the forthcoming years without taking even deeper cuts than we have in the current bill.
Some of the most contentious cuts come from the higher education budget, and while Alexander, a Republican from Lake Wales, admits it's not a perfect policy, he says the reductions can be made up for with reserves.
Universities in total, as of 12/31 of this year, hold $859 million in uncommitted cash in their collective bank accounts, and we're asking to have about $400 million of that returned to the state through a mechanism of one-time reductions that then restore to normal next year.
But some lawmakers say they've heard from university officials that those reserve dollars aren't really available because they've already been committed. Senate Higher Education Committee Chair Senator Evelyn Lynn says it's true some of the dollars universities hold in reserve are committed, but she underscores the budget only counts money that was available as of December 31st. She adds she's confident the level of education offered will not suffer because of the plan.
I do not anticipate that there will be any endangerment, opportunities for students, or the quality of programs offered.
And a series of amendments takes care of what Senator Mike Fasano, a Republican from Newport Richey, calls the unfair singling out of the University of South Florida. The school was targeted for deeper budget cuts than its counterparts, but Senator Jim Norman, a Republican from Tampa, says the amendments bring the University of South Florida's funding more in line with that of other schools around the state.
It puts University of South Florida on that same playing field as everyone else because there's proviso language that says for these kids to fulfill their educations, to continue on with USF, if there's any dollar shortfalls, USF will receive full funding for those educations.
Norman says the university is made whole, and from his view, the amendments make the budget fair. Other cuts targeted in the budget include closing several Florida prisons. Criminal Justice Appropriations Chair Senator Ellen Bogdanoff says closing the prisons is a necessary move, pointing out that privatizing the state's prisons could have changed that.
We basically need to find cost savings in 2012-2013 of approximately $74 million, and that is in large part because we did not privatize, so there was another $16 million that we could have possibly saved there to maybe keep open the prisons, but we have to do most of our savings of the $140 million, which we were asked to reduce, through the closures.
Lawmakers also debated the proposed health and human services budget, including reductions in adult mental health and substance abuse. After taking some fire, Budget Committee Chair Senator Joe Negron repeats what seems to have become almost a mantra. It's tough to make cuts.
There are difficult decisions that have to be made, and we have to juxtapose one important critical need against another important critical need. And funding a child hanging on for life that was born at 26 weeks in a neonatal unit is important. Funding early steps for a Down syndrome child is important. So these are all difficult decisions, and so it's not a lack of compassion. It's not a lack of acknowledging the dignity of every citizen who has a problem. but we have limited resources.
Lawmakers also considered a slew of amendments, including several that Senator Paula Dockery, a Republican from Lakeland, calls member projects. That's the reason she says she voted against the budget. Others say they can't support the budget because it doesn't find new revenue or because they're concerned about cuts in areas like education. The Senate passed its budget 33-6. Next, the House and Senate will meet in conference to work out differences between their proposals. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Regan McCarthy.
The House Higher Education Committee has released its plans to further revamp the state's college and university system. Lynn Hatter reports the proposal would expand the power of the board that oversees the state's 11 public universities and make it harder for the colleges to establish bachelor's degree programs.
Under the second of two higher education proposals by Republican Representative Bill Proctor, the Board of Governors would be able to weigh in on whether university presidents should be retained or let go. The move was championed by the board's chairman, Dean Colson, when he addressed members of the same education committee only a few days ago.
And we should not forget that the authority of the Constitution was given to us, and we should not hide behind what may have been a too broad delegation of powers to avoid the tough issues.
That could put certain university presidents in the hot seat. The board would also be allowed to take powers away from university boards of trustees. Proctor's bill sets up several different measures for evaluating institutional performance based on retention and graduation rates and postgraduate employment and salaries. Those metrics could also be used to determine a performance-based payment system. The proposal would also require greater collaboration between the state's community and state colleges, universities, and independent institutions, and sets up an outline for further tweaks to how the state's higher education systems are run. University of West Florida President Judy Bentz endorsed the proposal.
As one who struggles with a relatively unorganized higher education system in the state, I think the consolidation aspect of bringing all of the delivery systems together on the same page is very important. And I also think that metrics are important.
And so does the state university system chancellor, Frank Brogan, who has been calling for greater coordination between the different delivery systems for years.
Focusing our academic programs, enhancing our outcome-based approach to higher education in the state of Florida, and also making certain that we look at the revenue necessary to create what I hope and believe will become at least the best state university system in the United States. And I'm sure my colleagues with the Florida college system feel the same.
But from the state and community college system's perspective, that may be stretching it a bit.
We've carefully gone through the bill, and we have raised several questions that we're seeking some just clarification on, and I want to point out that the questions we have are not why something is in the bill, but to make sure we understand your intent.
Charles DeSant is with the Florida College System Council of Presidents. Several of the questions he raises fall around language in the bill that would require independent need reviews and input from the universities and independent institutions in order to create bachelor degree programs. Allowing community and state colleges to operate those programs has been a point of dispute in the higher education system. The group is also looking closely at language that would require all public higher education schools to create a common curriculum for certain undergraduate courses. The proposal also reduces the number of general education courses required from 36 to 30. Florida Association of Community College head Michael Brower says as the bill is currently written, that reduction could affect whether universities admit community college students.
So certainly anytime you start changing the content requirements of the one part of the 2+2 agreement, that could have some effect on the other part of the 2+2 agreement.
The proposals are a reflection of comments made over the course of session-long talks between lawmakers, college and university presidents on ways to better run the state's higher education system. Governor Rick Scott and Senate President-designate Don Gates have said they want more students in science, technology, engineering, and math programs. And House Speaker Dean Cannon has said he wants the state's higher education institutions to better align with one another. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Lynn Hatter.
Still to come on Capitol Report, as the first anti-abortion bill heads for a floor vote, opponents claim government intrusion, while some say having an abortion shouldn't be so easy.
I think everybody mentioned that this could create barriers. Well, good. I think when you make a choice to unilaterally end somebody else's life by force, we generally call that murder.
Florida's local governments and business community both find something to like in a constitutional amendment to cut property taxes.
Given the fact that cities are on the forefront of economic development and are excited to have an additional tool in the tool belt to form their packages to attract businesses.
And safety advocates rally at the Capitol.
And I'm here because of the fact that I remember the day I got old was the day this crash happened, and the day my daughter Dory died, February 23rd.
The first of about 10 anti-abortion bills filed in the Florida legislature this session is now heading to the House floor. But as Sasha Cordner reports, the measure has opponents saying it's government intrusion and it will further restrict abortions from taking place in Florida.
In its last committee stop, the House Health and Human Services Committee, Republican Representative Rachel Bergen of Riverview introduced a comprehensive anti-abortion bill that essentially places restrictions on abortions being performed in the state.
It requires continuing education for physicians to complete a 3-hour course on ethics each year, provides and changes the informed consent statute, which requires full informed consent 24 hours before an abortion is performed. Also requires reporting requirement to ACA and requires submission of data to the Center for Disease Control and Prevention.
There's also a requirement that only doctors who receive training on how to do abortions during their residencies can own a new abortion clinic. That didn't sit well with Emily Caponetti with Planned Parenthood.
Because the restrictions in HB 277 do not promote patients' health and only target physicians that provide abortion care, it is clear that the goal of HB 277 is to insert government interference between doctors and their patients.
Pamela Birch Ford with American Civil Liberties Union of Florida agrees. She says Bergen's bill is just a pile of rules and regulations that don't help women at all.
Let's be clear. This bill is about reducing the number of safe and legal abortion clinics and making it more difficult for women to exercise their constitutional right to a safe and legal abortion. This bill is also about discouraging physicians from performing abortions by placing onerous restrictions on them, restrictions that aren't placed on any other health care provider.
But Maureen Ahern, wife of GOP Representative Larry Ahern of St. Petersburg, disagrees.
In my opinion, this is a very good bill dealing with regulations and rules regarding abortions. It does nothing to attack or restrict women's health care, which I am all for since I am a woman.
Bergen's bill also sparked a heated debate among members of the House Health and Human Services Committee, with all the Democrats opposed, like Representative Mark Pafford.
As far as this bill, to make it clear, it is a barrier, and I will be voting against the bill today.
Republican Representative Jason Broder of Sanford countered that in this case, barriers could be a good thing.
I think everybody mentioned that this could create barriers. Well, good. I think when you make a choice to unilaterally end somebody else's life by force, we generally call that murder. I'm okay with it. I'm happy to support it, and I hope that we see more legislation like this. Thank you.
The bill's sponsor, Bergen, also amended her bill to include a provision by Republican Representative Daniel Davis to ban abortions after 20 weeks due to studies that show a fetus that old can feel pain. The bill passed in the House Health and Human Services Committee along a party-line vote with Democrats opposed. It now heads to the House floor. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sasha Cordner. You're listening to Capitol Report on the Florida Public Radio Network. I'm Tramell Gomes. When it comes to property taxes, Florida's local governments usually find themselves on the opposite side of the issue from the state's business community. But Tom Flanagan reports there was a rare show of agreement today during the Senate Finance and Tax Committee meeting.
Senator Nancy Dietert brought what's called a Senate Joint Resolution before the committee.
This is a proposed amendment to the Constitution that, if adopted, would provide additional property tax exemptions for tangible personal property.
Actually, the name tangible personal property is a bit of a misnomer, Dietert says, because it only involves property owned by persons who are business persons.
Even to the smallest businessman, it's a tax on your chair, your desk, your computer, and it's a tax forever on the same equipment until you get rid of the equipment.
This particular bill had its origins in Governor Rick Scott's office, but local governments were quick to condemn it because it would reduce their property tax collections. In the case of some smaller counties, the reduction would be particularly painful. So the governor's office redrafted the bill in the form of what's called a strike-all, and that's what Dietert was bringing before the Senate committee.
The original intent of the bill is to provide an additional exemption for tangible personal property tax for up to $50,000. It's currently at $25,000, so this would cover from $25,000 to $50,000. It also provides the legislature with the authority to allow local governments to provide additional exemptions for tangible personal property if they wish.
The proposed amendment's new wording drew applause from the local governments that had opposed the first draft, Amber Hughes with the Florida League of Cities saying it would cost Florida cities just under $3 million in taxes, a small investment for what they believed would be a much larger return.
Given the fact that cities are on the forefront of economic development and are excited to have an additional tool in the tool belt to form their packages to attract businesses, we are definitely behind this amendment and would urge you to support it.
Davin Suggs with the Florida Association of Counties estimated a huge number of existing businesses would benefit.
We believe it will take about 150,000 businesses. It will remove the requirement for them to have to file for TPP.
The acronym for Tangible Personal Property. That would work out to nearly half of all Florida businesses. Bill Hurley is the Florida head of the National Federation of Independent Business.
This is uniquely tailored to small businesses. This does not have a dollar benefit to businesses with more than $50,000 in tangible personal property assets. And we're very excited to have the support of the cities and counties. Look forward to working with them next year on how they're going to use this new tool to encourage economic development.
And committee member Thad Altman, Republican of Melbourne, noted this was one of those rare occasions when state lawmakers were urging a local tax cut that cities and counties actually wanted.
It was so much of our tax reform is singled out local governments, and they're providing emergency law enforcement, fire, ambulance services, recreational services. You just can't keep putting that monkey on the back of just local government.
With everyone agreeing the property tax break would be a good thing, the committee passed the resolution and sent it on to the Senate floor. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Tom Flanagan.
Over in the House floor session today, lawmakers unanimously passed a measure that makes it a misdemeanor to protest within 500 feet and from 1 hour before or to 1 hour after the end of a funeral, burial, or memorial service. It criminalizes the intent to disrupt such events and does not require that an actual disturbance occurred. Republican Representative Patrick Rooney, the bill's sponsor from Palm Beach Gardens, says he thinks the measure will pass constitutional muster against any free speech challenges. The bill was intended primarily to prevent disruptions at funerals or military service people, such as those that Westboro Baptist Church members have become known for. The House also unanimously gave the okay to a measure that lets local residents decide whether to place term limits on their county commissioners and other countywide elected officials. The proposal requires an amendment to the state constitution that would have to be approved at the next general election with 60% support. A county would have to allow term limits in its charter. A staff analysis says 20 out of Florida's 67 counties operate under a charter, and 10 of those charters already allow for term limits. Now, this didn't pass unanimously, but it did pass. The Florida House approved a bill intended to overhaul what some critics say is the state's antiquated alimony law. Representative Rich Workman's bill, House Bill 549, was passed on an 83-30 vote. The Melbourne Republican said the measure will ensure alimony is fair to both ex-spouses. It would end permanent lifetime alimony in favor of long-term support that has a foreseeable end. But it also allows for a retroactively changing alimony payment such that the ex-spouse getting the support could wind up owing money back. The bill now goes to the Senate. Now here's Ronald J. Evan with a look at some of the action around the Capitol tomorrow.
The Senate begins a long day starting at 9 a.m. on Friday. Senate President Mike Karyanopoulos set aside 9 hours to hear bills. The Revenue Estimating Impact Conference meets at 9 a.m. to determine the financial impact of several bills. At 11:30, the Capitol Tiger Bay Club meets with the Florida Retail Federation's Rick McAllister to speak. He'll be on hand to debate an internet sales tax. At 1 p.m., the House will be in session, and the Education Estimating Conference meets at 1:15. And that's the day booked for Friday, February 24th.
Finally, in the wake of a new report highlighting an increase in fatalities among teen drivers, Governor Rick Scott has declared this Florida Road Safety Week. James Call reports Scott joined law enforcement officials and paramedics on the steps of the Capitol to call attention to the hazards of impaired and distracted driving.
The National Governors Highway Safety Association says nationwide, teen driving fatalities increased 11% in the first 6 months of 2011. Florida posted the third biggest increase with 15 deaths, a 66% jump from the previous year. Governor Scott, in proclaiming Road Safety Week, called on Floridians to make a strong commitment to practice safe driving.
Drivers share a great portion of the responsibility. When we get behind the wheel, we each have a responsibility to practice safe driving, to be alert and not distracted. Others who share the road with us deserve it. And all of us have been around individuals that have had accidents because they were, you know, listening to music, looking around, being on the phone, doing some of the wrong things.
Speaking after Scott was perhaps the legislature's main proponent of traffic safety laws, especially those concerning teen drivers. Boca Raton Representative Irv Schlossberg lost a 14-year-old daughter in a 1996 car crash.
And I'm here because of the fact that I remember the day I got old was the day this crash happened and the day my daughter Dory died, February 23rd.
Florida's seatbelt law is named after Dory Schlossberg. Representative Schlossberg had retired from the legislature in 2006 and returned in 2010. He carries with him a report showing nothing kills more teens in the United States than driving. Florida has the country's fourth highest teen driving fatality rate.
And so you can ask me, well, what's the reason? Why did I come back? Well, I had a feeling that road safety in the state of Florida is going backwards, especially for teenagers. And Governor, it is. Fatalities are on the rise. And not only are they on the rise, the state of Florida has one of the biggest rises in the country.
Schlossberg is sponsoring two bills addressing traffic safety. One increases the age to get a driver's license to 17, and the other would prohibit the use of cell phones and electronic devices when driving by those younger than 18. Schlossberg says the House leadership has shown little interest in his or other traffic safety bills filed this session.
Well, about passenger restrictions, it's not being called. Too many kids in a car, overcrowding kids. He's not calling that bill. They're not calling the bill about distractions. You know there are no distraction tickets given in the state of Florida? Zero. Texting and driving? Children? Texting and driving? You know what? Some kids could drive well, but these are children. They can't text and drive. It's impossible.
35 states have a ban on texting while driving, and a Senate proposal has cleared all of its committees. But it appears that for the third year in a row, the House will not address the issue. Speaker Dean Cannon has said he is, quote, wary of another layer of prohibitive behavior. In the meantime, Schlossberg and other safety advocates like Colonel Dave Brierton of the Florida Highway Patrol use media events to try to encourage people to practice safe driving techniques.
You know, we enforce whatever laws are in place, and so because there is no law in place at the present time specifically addressing that, we address it through public awareness and educational programs.
Brierton stood with the governor when Scott proclaimed February 19th through the 26th as Florida Road Safety Week. The proclamation declares distracted driving dangerous and calls attention to the suffering it creates for countless families. For Florida Public Radio, I'm James Call.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are James Call, Sasha Cordner, Tom Flanagan, Lynn Hatter, and Regan McCarthy. Thanks also to the contributing stations along the Florida Public Radio Network. Taylor Cox provides technical assistance for Capitol Report, and I'm Tremel Gomes, inviting you to join us each weeknight for more reports from the state capitol.